This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
A senior UN official says there is absolutely no safe place in Rafah as Israel intensifies its strikes on the southern Gazan city ahead of a planned ground assault. The Israeli army confirms the loss of three more of its troopers in Gaza, bringing the regime forces' death toll since their ground invasion to 232. And the Secretary General of Lebanon, Hezbollah, says the resistance movement's attacks on Israel will only end when the aggression on the Gaza Strip stops. I'm Behrouz Najafi. It's good to have you with us. Israel's pressing ahead with its bombing campaign in the Gaza Strip, taking the lives of more civilians in the Palestinian territory. Now, in the south, the regime fired artillery shells at the city of Khan Yunis, cutting off electricity to Nasser Hospital, where thousands are sheltering. Israel's ordered people to evacuate from the medical complex, while the regime forces continue bombing areas around it. Snipers are also hitting civilians in the yards of the Nasser Hospital. On Monday, two mosques and an Islamic university in the southern city of Rafah were also targeted by Israeli strikes, resulting in dozens of casualties. Some 28,500 Palestinians have been killed, mainly women and children, since the beginning of the onslaught in Gaza in early October. Now, let's get some first-hand account of the situation on the ground there, so we'll go to Deir al-Balah to bring in our correspondent who's there, Muti Abu Musabba, is not joining me. Muti, what update do you have for us? What's the situation like?
Well, the Israeli killing machine continues to claim the lives of more Palestinian civilians. The last couple of hours, the Israeli occupation forces intensified their attacks against several areas of Gaza Strip. Despite all eyes are turned into Rafah City, the Israeli occupation forces over the last hour attacked Gaza City relentlessly and intensely. And let me say that as we speak these moments, the Israeli war planes attacked a residential building in a Zawaida refugee camp, which is located in the surrounding areas of Deir al-Balah city. Apparently, there are multiple Palestinian casualties left behind that attack because the ambulances moved moments ago to the place, to that place where that residential building was attacked by the Israeli war planes. In Gaza City, as I have just mentioned, that the Israeli war planes targeted several residential buildings, particularly in Al-Rimal neighborhood and As-Sana'a Square. Multiple residential buildings were flattened over the relentless Israeli airstrikes. In addition to that, several Palestinian civilian cars were also targeted by the Israeli fighter drones, leaving dozens of the Palestinian casualties. At least six Palestinian civilians were killed over those attacks. In addition to that, as you know, that the Zaytun neighborhood was under a heavy bombardment of the white phosphorus bombs used by the Israeli occupation forces since the morning of today. So Gaza City, despite that it was targeted by the Israeli ground offensive, it is now attacked once again by the Israeli continuous air strikes. When it comes to the southern part of Gaza Strip, we are talking about catastrophic conditions. When it was about the continuous chronic Israeli airstrikes that hit Rafah City these moments, we are talking about multiple residential buildings were attacked by the Israeli war planes, leaving dozens of the Palestinian casualties, particularly in the eastern parts of the city. As you know, that even in the north part of the city, the Israeli occupation forces targeted and attacked a group of the Palestinian civilians, including multiple Palestinian journalists, including the Al Jazeera correspondent Ismail Abu Omar, He was critically injured by that attack, and he had his leg amputated over that horrendous attack. So this reflects clearly how catastrophic the conditions are in Rafah City, as the Israeli occupation forces maintain their attacks every moment, and amid the continuous catastrophic humanitarian conditions, as you know that the people are severely denied from the basic humanitarian needs in Rafah City. They have no access to the basic humanitarian needs, and there are rising concerns among the international human rights organizations that the people would face an inevitable catastrophe and famine if this situation continues for so long time. So this, when it comes to Rafah City, these humanitarian catastrophic conditions actually pushed the people to flee once again from Rafah, looking for the protection and safety elsewhere in the devastated Gaza Strip. We have witnessed here from Deir al-Balah city exodus from the Palestinian displaced Palestinian civilians who were enforced previously to flee to Rafah city. They now are forced once again to flee Rafah city into Deir al-Balah city and into the central area of Gaza Strip. So this is the situation for the Palestinian civilians. For roughly four consecutive months, they are moving from a place to another place under the continuous Israeli airstrikes that torn their bodies apart, including the Palestinian children. In Khan Yunis city, the catastrophic humanitarian conditions actually are still befalling for the Palestinian people, because, as you know, that according to Gaza's health ministry, that the Palestinian evacuees who are stranded in the hospital in the Nasser medical complex, they are deprived of their basic humanitarian needs, and they are facing the imminent threat of the death, as the Israeli occupation forces still clamp down over them. It's worth mentioning that over the last couple of hours, the Israeli occupation forces demanded them to leave the complex. We are talking about 10,000 Palestinian civilians. They are demanded by the Israeli occupation forces to evacuate under the heavy gunfire of the Israeli tanks and the Israeli snipers who are topping the surrounding buildings and shooting at everyone moving inside the yards and in the vicinity of the medical complex. The humanitarian conditions inside the complex are catastrophic, because the people, as you know, they are facing, in addition to those humanitarian conditions, they are under the threat of the contagious diseases, as the rubbish are still piled up in the yards of the hospital. And in addition to that, as you know, that the rose sewage also leaked into the buildings of where the people taking shelter inside the buildings. So we are talking about catastrophic conditions for the Palestinian civilians stranded in the complex, and even and despite the continuous and repetitive demands of the Israeli occupation forces to evacuate the complex, they are repeatedly targeted by the Israeli occupation forces.
That's true.
And even the people who are still located in the surrounding areas of the medical complex, the Israeli occupation forces attack them and open their gunfire to those Palestinian people.
All right. Thanks a lot for that, Mati. And the funny thing is, they just ordering evacuation orders. Where to? God knows. Wherever they go, they are attacked. Thanks a lot for that, Mati Abu Musabba, our correspondent in Deir al-Balah in central Gaza. Now, moving on, the head of the UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees has expressed concerns over the situation in Gaza's southern city of Rafah, saying that there is absolutely no safe place there.
We were talking about the situation in Rafah, which is deeply, deeply concerning. And as you know, people are anxious and in fear of a possible large-scale military operation. If this military operation is taking place, the question is, where will the civilian go? There is absolutely no safe place in Rafah anymore, and the fear is that the number of people killed and injured might again significantly increase.
Philippe Lazzarini made the comments after meeting with UN member states in Geneva. He said that it was impossible to expect more than 1 million displaced people crammed into Rafah to move once again. Lazzarini also slammed the calls to dismantle Ottawa, warning about the impact of the move. Israel has accused 12 Ottawa employees of helping Hamas in its October 7th operation without providing any evidence. But the allegation prompted the regime's Western bankers to suspend their funding of the agency. The UN aid agency warned that it will have to cease its vital services by the end of the month. Israel's confirmed the more deaths among its forces in battles with Palestinian resistance fighters on the ground in Gaza. The Israeli military has announced the loss of 3 soldiers, including a senior officer. It says deaths were caused by an explosion inside a booby-trapped building. 15 more regime troopers were seriously injured in that blast. The latest fatalities pushed the death toll among the Israeli forces to 232 since the beginning of the ground invasion of Gaza. Palestinian sources, however, saying that the regime undercounts its losses for fear of the Israeli public anger. Iran's foreign minister Hossein Amin Abdollahian has held talks with Qatari officials on the third leg of his regional tour. Now, during a meeting with the Emir of Qatar, the top Iran diplomat hailed Iran-Qatar cooperation on regional and international matters. Amin Abdollahian also stressed the importance of expediting joint efforts by Tehran and Doha to find a political solution to end the Gaza crisis. The Qatari emir, for his part, thanked Iran for supporting Palestine and seeking a solution to end the onslaught on Palestinians. The Iranian foreign minister has also met with the Hamas political bureau chief Ismail Haniyeh in Doha. The two discussed the latest developments in Gaza and the delivery of humanitarian aid to civilians, among other topics. Amir Abdollahian is on a regional tour that has already taken him to Syria and Lebanon. Welcome to the news review. Hezbollah's leader says that the Lebanese resistance movement will stick to its anti-Israel operations until the aggression against Gaza stops. Said Hassan Nasrallah said that this is a moral duty and a strategic interest for Lebanon. He made a comment in televised speech in response to criticism that a movement's anti-Israel operations could endanger the Arab country. He argued that a weak Israel would benefit the whole region, while a strong Israel would pose a greater threat. He said if the regime emerges victorious in the Gaza war, it may decide to invade Lebanon again, as it did in the 1980s. Nasrallah said that Israel only understands the language of force since it doesn't respect international resolutions. Now, to discuss this, let me invite a correspondent in Lebanon, Mariam Saleh, joining me from Beirut. Mariam, I just introduced some highlights of what Saidus and Nasrallah had in his speech. Let's have a few more points that are of the essence.
Yes, of course, Beryl. It's really difficult to put it in brief, but what we can say the highlights of this speech is when we talk about what will happen in South Lebanon after the war in Gaza stops, of course, Sayyid Nasrallah had said from the beginning that once the Israeli offensive and the Israeli aggression and the massacres that are being committed in Gaza stop, then Hezbollah would stop its operations in South Lebanon, all along the Galilee region, in occupied Lebanese and Palestinian and Syrian territory. However, he did say, responding to warnings by the Israeli war minister, Gallant, he said that the minister said that he will continue the war on Lebanon even if there is a truce in Gaza. So he told Sayyid Nasrallah, showed that the resistance is ready. It is determined that even if the war in Gaza stops and the Israelis continue their aggressions in South Lebanon, then therefore they will act upon those aggressions and those Israeli violations based on the formulas and the equations that they have put forth. And Hezbollah has, from the beginning, basically put some sort of an equation and a deterrence equation that they have forced the Israeli to somewhat stick to, trying to keep the civilian population as safe as possible. Of course, Sayyid Nasrallah did also send and issue a new warning for the Israelis. He clearly said that if you are incapable of dealing with the fact that you have some 100,000 Israeli settlers that have been evacuated from that area, then if another war erupts or the Israelis do escalate the situation, then you will have to deal and find shelter for some 2 million Israeli settlers in all of the north. And so this is another new hint that we have from Hezbollah Secretary General that it's not only just that Hezbollah will go beyond the boundaries and the limits that they have put forth in the use of their arms or where they hit the Israeli regime, but they will go further into all of the northern occupied Palestinian region. So that in itself is very significant. And he stressed, of course, that as long as the war does continue, that Hezbollah will continue to enforce to inflict casualties. And Hezbollah has, of course, today also, just like every day, launched new operations and inflicted heavy losses on the Israeli military all along the Galilee. And just recently in Kiryat Shmona, they launched an attack against an Israeli police station. And so that is new. It is in the heart of one of the settlements. And so that basically is a hint to what could be, what could come ahead.
Okay, I appreciate your comments and insight. Mariam Salah, our correspondent in Beirut. The heads of American and Israeli spy agencies have met with Egyptian and Qatari officials to resume negotiations on a ceasefire in Gaza. Now, according to Egyptian media, the CIA and Mossad chiefs have sat with the Qatari prime minister and senior Egyptian officials in capital Cairo. The courted meeting is a follow-up of the framework hammered out in Paris last month, in which negotiators proposed a three-phase deal. That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Goodbye.
Comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight. A record number of children and young people in England are seeking help for mental health problems. We take a look at some of the press and world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The British newspaper The Guardian has covered this story and tells us more. According to data laying bare the impact of lengthy waiting lists for regular National Health Service treatment, the number of children referred to emergency mental health care in England has soared by more than 50% in 3 years. Analysis of official data by the Royal College of Psychiatrists revealed there were 32,521 emergency and urgent referrals to child and adolescent mental health services crisis teams in 2022-2023. In 2019-2020, the year before the COVID pandemic, the figure was 21,242. The increase means more than 600 mentally ill children a week are deteriorating to such a state that they need reach a crisis point. The college said many of the children requiring emergency care, some suicidal or seriously ill as a result of eating disorders, have been stuck on waiting lists for an average of 5 months, and in the worst cases, as long as 2 years. British MPs and health leaders said the National Health Service figures expose a devastating explosion of untreated severe mental ill health among children and should be a wake-up call for the government. They added there was now a serious risk that the alarming surge in children reaching crisis point before being able to access help was becoming the new norm. The president of the Royal College of Psychiatrists, Dr. Lade Smith, told The Guardian no one should have to watch their child's mental health deteriorate while they wait for care, adding, "It's completely unacceptable that this is the reality facing so many families." Dr. Lade Smith said ministers must take urgent action to provide targeted support to every child in need of mental health care and turn the tide on the country's growing children's mental health crisis. She added, "We want to provide young people with effective care as soon as they need it, not once they've already developed a serious illness which could have been prevented. That's why we need to see government focus on prevention and reversing the rising rates of mental illness, as well as ensuring sufficient resources of specialist services." The British newspaper The Sun has also covered the same story and tells us more. Record numbers of children and young people in England are seeking help for mental health problems. In 2022 alone, 1.4 million were referred to child and adolescent mental health services for treatment of anxiety, depression, eating disorders and other psychological problems. But as demand soars for children's mental health care and support, the child and adolescent mental health services teams are struggling to see or treat children quickly enough. Experts say that is leading to thousands of under-18s getting even sicker while on waiting lists, prompting a 53% rise in emergency and urgent referrals for child and adolescent mental health services crisis care. An emergency referral is normally made if a child needs to be seen within 24 hours. Experts say they might be at risk to themselves due to suicidal feelings, have a significant health risk because of an illness such as anorexia, or have another serious mental health condition. Emergency referrals to child and adolescent mental health services are mostly made by general practitioners and doctors in accidents and emergency departments, which are seeing rising numbers of mentally ill children arrive with nowhere else to turn, although schools and social services can also do so. Dr. Elaine Lockhart, the chair of the college's child and adolescent faculty, said, "It's unacceptable that so many children and young people are reaching crisis point before they're able to access care. We cannot allow this to become the new norm." Dr. Elaine Lockhart said, "Severe mental illness is not just an adult problem. The need for specialist mental health services for children and young people is growing all the time." She added, "Many of the conditions arising in children could be prevented or treated if prompt support and access to care were available." Dr. Elaine Lockhart noted, "The evidence shows us that children who receive support quickly are less likely to develop long-term conditions that negatively affect their education, social development and health in later life. Government and integrated care boards must commit to reducing the rate of mental illness among children by setting an achievable target. This needs to be backed by an expansion of the mental health workforce and additional funding for services." The college welcomed last year's government announcement of an extra £5 million to improve access to early support hubs for people aged between 11 and 25, but it said an extra £125 million to £205 million would be needed to establish hubs in every local authority, with running costs of at least £114 million a year. Laura Bunt, the chief executive of Young Minds, a child's mental health charity, said, "Every young person should be able to access the help they need when they need it. The government must prioritise young people's mental health and make it much easier for them to get support." Daisy Cooper MP, the Liberal Democrat health spokesperson, said, "This devastating explosion of mental ill health among children should be a wake-up call for the government. Conservative ministers have neglected children's mental health during and after the pandemic, leaving mental health services and families in crisis." The British newspaper The Guardian has also covered the same story. A charity cautioned a worrying number of people taking time off work due to poor mental health leaves the United Kingdom at risk of becoming a burnt-out nation. The head of Mental Health UK has suggested global issues such as climate change and artificial intelligence fueling feelings of hopelessness could be contributing to burnout. It comes after a survey revealed more than a third of adults faced extreme pressure in the workplace in the past year. The YouGov opinion poll of 2,060 adults, 1,132 of whom were workers, found 35% had experienced high or extreme levels of pressure at work, with 20% requiring time off due to poor mental health caused by stress in the past year. Mental Health UK's chief executive, Brian Dow, warned the United Kingdom was rapidly becoming a burnt-out nation, with a worrying number of people taking time off work due to poor mental health caused by stress. He added, "High levels of work absence due to poor mental health are a major challenge, but its causes are complex." He continued by saying, "Public attitudes and understanding towards mental health and work have changed, particularly as the workplace transformed overnight in response to the pandemic." Dow stated, "Meanwhile, we live in unprecedented times and life outside of work has become increasingly difficult due to the cost of living crisis and pressures on public services. While global challenges such as climate change and artificial intelligence fuel stress, anxiety and feelings of hopelessness." Dow called on the government to intervene and better support the workforce. He advocated for a national conversation on the issue. Mental Health UK urged Prime Minister Rishi Sunak to hold a national summit to bring together ministers, employers and experts in an effort to create a healthy workplace and better support for workers.
This is A to Z. An introduction to Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, the significance of the Islamic Revolution of Iran. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to A to Z. Dear listeners, this is Ali, and in today's episode of A to Z, we want to talk about the Islamic Revolution that took place in Iran. And also at the same time, we want to look and inspect who Imam Khomeini was, the founder of the Islamic Revolution. There are some critical questions that we have been trying to address through these series of episodes of A to Z, and those questions are very critical that need to be thought through by every single individual out there. See, we live in 21st century where we have curiosity about so many different topics and subjects that one cannot even fathom and one cannot even imagine. The curiosity level of human beings has raised to a level which is unprecedented. But what we're saying is that in addition to your curiosities, what you need to be thinking and you must be asking is what this Islamic Revolution accomplished and how did it happen and what did it bring to the people? Who was Imam Khomeini? Why is he still talked about? What were the factors that distinguished Imam Khomeini as a personality from other reformers of the past and the present? What is it that makes the Islamic Revolution truly unique when you compare it to other revolutions that have taken place? So, brothers and sisters, in order to understand and answer these questions, we need to be inspecting and we need to be studying what the Islamic Revolution was all about. What is, if you allow, the term Khomeiniism? Khomeiniism is something that needs to be understood by the world today. Imam Khomeini did not believe in compromising, brothers and sisters. He's the founder of the Islamic Revolution, right? He did not believe in compromising on principles, those human principles. Though he could have easily sided with one superpower to counter the materialistic imperialism of the other, he instead challenged the two prevailing superpowers of his time, namely the Soviets and America. Welcome back, dear listeners. So Imam Khomeini did not side with America, or he did not side with Russia. He said, we reject both of these systems, which are actually heads-on at that time. Keep in mind, like if you go back in history, these two systems, they were going through a power struggle. Imam Khomeini, instead, he raised a different slogan. He said, La Sharqiya, La Gharbiya, Islamiya, Islamiya. That we're not going to go with the East, that is, the Russia or Soviets. We're not going to go with the West, which is America. We're going to go with Islam. Islam is our choice. Islam is the criteria. Islam is our foundation. This is who Imam Khomeini was. He challenged these two prevailing superpowers of that time who were going through that power struggle. He stood his ground as a matter of principle. Brothers and sisters, Khomeiniism is not about maintaining a cult of personality like Stalinism or Maoism. That is what the critiques of the revolution would have us believe. Brothers and sisters, Khomeiniism, in fact, is about standing for truth, standing for haq. It is about resisting the oppressor and supporting the oppressed, and no compromises whatsoever. There are two types of ulama. There are two types of scholars. One is the ulama-i haq and ulama-i su. This is the other category. The ulama that are on the haq, they are on the side of truth. And then there are scholars who are on the side of falsehood. Okay? Now, Imam Khomeini, in contemporary times, was that beacon of light for all of the scholars of haq and truth. So for now, we leave you in Allah's care, and thank you for listening to today's show.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parsetoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
New figures showed company insolvencies in Britain soared last year as businesses struggled with inflation crisis and the long-term impact of the COVID pandemic. We've taken a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The British newspaper The Guardian has covered this story and tells us more. According to a report, more than 47,000 British companies are on the brink of collapse after a 25% jump in the number of businesses facing critical financial distress in the final 3 months of 2023. The latest red flag report by insolvency specialist Begbies Traynor found it marks the second consecutive quarter-on-quarter period when critical financial distress has risen by 25%. The construction and property sectors accounted for 30% of all businesses facing critical financial distress. The quarterly rate of increase in the number of companies facing critical financial distress grew by 32.6% in the construction industry, by 41.3% in the healthcare and education industry, and a quarter in real estate and property services, and 24% in the support services. 18 of the 22 sectors covered by the report recorded double-digit percentage growth in the number of firms whose finances have reached critical condition. Julie Palmer, a partner at Begbies Traynor, said the tough macroeconomic conditions had created a perfect storm for British businesses. Julie Palmer added, "After a difficult year for British business that was characterized by high interest rates, rampant inflation, weak consumer confidence and rising and unpredictable input costs, we are now seeing this perfect storm impact every corner of the economy." The Bank of England raised interest rates from 0.1% at the end of 2021 to 5.25% to try to tame inflation. That has significantly increased the cost of borrowing for British businesses, preventing many from papering over the cracks with cheap debt. Julie Palmer, a partner at Begbies Traynor, said hundreds of thousands of businesses in the United Kingdom who loaded up on affordable debt during those halcyon days are now coming to terms with the added burden this will have on their finances. Sadly, for tens of thousands of British businesses who should be looking ahead with some degree of optimism, the new year will bring a fight for survival. The report found that 539,000 British firms were facing significant financial stress by the end of last year, up by 12.9% in the third quarter of 2023. Most firms facing critical financial distress were based in London and the southeast of England, with the fewest in the northeast and in Northern Ireland. Susanna Streeter, the head of the money and markets at Hargreaves Lansdowne, said, "Last year, the number of firms going bust had already reached the highest level since the great financial crisis of 2008. Susanna Streeter added, "A big chunk of those firms sending up alarm signals are expected to collapse over the next year, adding to expectations that a recession in Britain is imminent." The website of Brexit Carnage has also covered this story and tells us more. New figures showed company insolvencies in the United Kingdom soared last year as businesses struggled with the inflation crisis and the long-term impact of the COVID pandemic. According to CreditSafe, a credit checking agency which tracks 430 million businesses around the world, a total of 30,199 British businesses were involved in some kind of insolvency action in 2023, 52% higher than in previous year 2021. According to Drew Fahia, CreditSafe's data director, some of those insolvencies are likely to have been companies which would have failed earlier but were kept afloat by government help during the COVID pandemic. Drew Fahia said, "For the companies that were doing well, COVID really hurt them, but for the ones that were struggling anyway, it probably gave them a bit of breathing space to get them back where they needed to be." Others are businesses which were thriving until the COVID pandemic. The Prop Factory had been turning over £800,000 a year and employing 15 people to make and hire out vintage games such as coconut shies and duck shoot galleries for corporate events. Carmen Croxall, the co-founder of the firm, said, "We did Facebook's Christmas party in Dublin. We've worked for Google. We did Renault Formula One's Christmas party." That ground to a halt when the COVID pandemic hit, and in spite of a boost in 2022, when there was a mini boom due to the pent-up demand from customers keen to hold the celebration, they closed the event hire business just before Christmas. Carmen Croxall added, "It never really recovered. This year was 46% down. There was a seismic shift in the industry because people have made cutbacks and we were right at the bottom of the pecking order. The question that remains is whether or not insolvencies will return to pre-pandemic levels soon. CreditSafe tracks whether firms are creditworthy by examining banking data and said that in 2023, British companies paid 45% of all invoices late, up from 35% in 2021 and just over 11 days late on average. Globally, firms in the United States were the slowest to pay, nearly 16 days late on average. According to Stephanie Buckley, who founded the insolvency company with her husband Gareth in 2018 and works with businesses that are shutting down, so far there are no signs that insolvencies are slowing down. She said 2023 had been a record year for their practice. She added, "We see all sorts of reasons for business failures. Grief, baby loss, loss of loved ones, their own health problems. There seem to be a lot more health problems now." She added, "Also, people are struggling to recruit. In a lot of industries, it is hard to find staff, and that has an impact on the business. And costs have gone up with inflation. Those are the main reasons, but everybody we work with cites the COVID pandemic and Brexit." Liz Barclay, the Small Business Commissioner, said that firms had been hit in 2023 by interest rate rises, by inflation rising, business rates and taxes, debt repayments and skills and labour shortages. Liz Barclay added, "This underlines why it's vitally important that all big customers pay their suppliers along the supply chain as quickly as possible. Late payments and extended payment terms add to those businesses' woes and are often the straw that brings vital businesses to their knees. We must make 2024 the year we improve payment practices to help all the firms we deal with to pay and bills, play their part in growing the economy and staying solvent." Tina McKenzie, policy chair at the Federation of Small Businesses, said, "There's always a lag between economic troubles and a rise in the number of insolvencies, as businesses throw everything they have at attempts to keep going before having to call it a day. With growth sluggish at best in 2023, we may well see an impact on small firms' finances this year, even if the economic outlook improves."
Assalamu alaikum, dear brothers and sisters, and welcome to the Ocean of Dua, your gateway to spiritual insight. Your host, Mushtaba Farzaneh, is here, and it's a joyous privilege to go on this journey of faith with all of you. Here is another episode continuing our discussion on the heartwarming messages of the whispered prayer Sha'baniyah. Through heartfelt conversations, insightful discussions, and reflections upon the rich heritage of Islamic wisdom, we aim to ignite a spark within each of us, awakening our spiritual potential and facilitating personal growth. Without any further ado, Let's open our hearts and listen to today's part of the Munajat. I'll be here with you momentarily.
إلهي إن من تعرف بك غير مجهول ومن لاذ بك غير مخذول ومن أقبلت عليه غير مملول إلهي إن من انتهج بك لم مستنير وإن من اعتصم بك لم مستجير وقد لذت بك يا إلهي فلا تخيب ظني من رحمتك ولا تحجبني عن رأفتك.
Now that we have admired the beauty of these lines, let's read their English translation. O God, the one known by you remains unseen by none. Those who seek refuge in you are never devoid of strength and hope. And those upon whom you bestow your attention never grow weary. O Allah, for the one who seeks your aid, a path shall be illuminated. And for the one who holds fast to you, sanctuary shall be granted. In you, my Lord, I have sought refuge. So let not your mercy abandon me, nor your knowledge conceal me. In this profound part of the Munajat, we are reminded of some of the blessings that awaits us under the divine embrace of our relationship with God. Let us explore the treasures that lie within these sacred words. Number 1. Recognition. Whoever is bestowed with fame from God shall not remain anonymous. Number 2. Refuge. When we seek support in God, we find strength and protection, never helplessness and vulnerability. Number 3. Attention. As God turns His gaze upon us, we are infused with renewed steadfastness, never growing weary or discouraged. Number 4. Guidance. Those who walk the path of God are bestowed with clarity and illumination, their journey unfolding with purpose and direction. The last but not least, sanctuary. When we hold fast to God, we are enveloped in His loving embrace, finding refuge and tranquility amidst the storms of life. These blessings bestowed upon us by the Almighty enrich our lives and fortify our souls as we navigate the journey of faith. Before I shed a little bit of light on these blessings, let's have a break and I'll be here waiting for you.
Alhamdulillah, we have been given the blessed opportunity of witnessing another month of Sha'ban, which is the month of Allah's mercy and pleasure. Hafaftahu bi-rahmati wa-ridwan. Allah has covered this month with His pleasure and mercy. I thought it might be good to have a little introduction to Munajat Sha'baniyya. The late Imam Khomeini in many places on several occasions emphasized on this Munajat, and in one of his sayings he said that there are many important mystical points that one can understand from the Quran and whispered prayers of Imams. And then in particular, he mentioned Munajat Sha'baniyya, and he said philosophers, mystics may be able to understand some aspects of these whispered prayers. But if someone wants to really understand must be a person who has himself achieved a high level of closeness to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, so that he can have a taste, he can have an experience of what he says. In another place, the late Imam Khomeini said something very important. He said, this Munajat al-Sha'baniyya is one of the whispered prayers that if someone pays attention to it and follows it and reflects on it, he can reach somewhere. He can achieve some levels of perfection. We ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to forgive us in this month of forgiveness and to be pleased with us in this month of pleasure. We ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to bless us, our families, our community, all humanity with His pleasure, with His reward, with the coming of Imam Mahdi ajjalallahu ta'ala farajahu sharif, with forgiveness, with being able to remain always on the right path.
The first blessing mentioned was recognition, implying that if God chooses to make us known for something, it will not remain concealed to others, and our qualities will be noticed. However, we have often been told that seeking fame is not among the noblest pursuits for a person. This is indeed true, yet we find examples in the lives of great prophets, such as Prophet Solomon, who sought something beyond mere fame. رَبَّ اغْفِرْ لِي وَهَبْ لِي مُلْكًا لَا يَنْبَغِي لِأَحَدٍ مِّن بَعْدِي. He asked for a kingdom that would remain unseen by humanity. The intention behind these qualities is of great importance. Prophet Solomon desired an empire to establish and propagate monotheism on earth. Hence, in such cases, God grants fame to those individuals so that they can utilize it as a means to promote their noble cause. To conclude this episode, we humbly request God in the final segment of the supplication. O Allah, now that I have sought refuge in You, and it is expected that whoever seeks refuge in You shall find shelter, is it conceivable that You would not provide me with sanctuary? Do not disappoint me with the absence of Your mercy, and do not allow any barrier to obstruct the flow of Your kindness towards me. Your grace and mercy emanate from You abundantly, and if I fail to receive it, it is due to the presence of a barrier. O God, remove this obstacle and grant me the opportunity to attain Your divine favor and blessing. Thank you very much for listening to this episode. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Shaban b jamalak jalalak zahawban wal alam yqul lak ahibbak ya shaban. Shaban b jamalak jalalak zahawban. Shaban b jamalak jalalak
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 25 meters, 11,880 kHz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio.